talk first, the meeting will follow to make a little more sense.
So, happy almost February, which almost seems like an oxymoron. February can be kind of a grim time of year in these parts. It's often gray, alternately slushy and wet, often still bitterly cold, and depending on how things go, we may still be pounded with a snowstorm or two. At the beginning of this sordid month to come, we will observe the behavior of a large brown rodent said to predict the weather for the next 6 weeks. If the groundhog sees its shadow and scuffles back into its hole, then we'll have 6 more weeks of winter. If, on the other hand, it doesn't see its shadow, indicating overcast and presumably less favorable weather, then that actually means that winter is drawing to a close. Why is that? Why does a sunny day in early February predict a miserable month to come, but a cloudy day harkens the coming of spring? Seems a little counterintuitive, no? The beginning of February is significant because it marks the halfway point between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox. In neo-pagan tradition, these 4 halfway points are often called the cross-quarter days, and they have names of their own. February 1st is celebrated in the Celtic tradition as Imol, and the central figure of this pastoral holiday is the goddess Brigid, or Breed in the Irish pronunciation. Imol is also the time when Caia, the divine hag of Gaelic tradition, gathers her firewood for the remainder of the winter. If she wishes to make the winter last longer, then she will make Imol a sunny day so that she can gather more wood. Sound familiar? So in a sense, Imol is a day meant to be a day of reprieve when there are difficult times ahead, a time to gather our resources and prepare for the winter yet to come. I have a long-standing love for Celtic tradition, growing out of my own Christian background and extending into the pre-Christian traditions of Ireland and Scotland. The idea for today's service and its theme were conceived in my mind back in 2016. As I wrote and prepared this service, and as I delivered it to my own congregation, it seemed to me that winter was only just beginning. 4 years later, I still find myself looking ahead to an increasingly uncertain future, both for myself and for the world at large. And I won't lie, I asked myself a few times in the writing of this what I could say about Imol, about Brigid, about ancient Celtic lore that could speak to us today with more than academic interest or passive inspiration. The more I read about Brigid, though, the more I found my own questions answered. Brigid is often said to be a triple goddess. She represents many things, actually. She's a sun goddess, she's associated with the elements of both fire and water, but her 3 main aspects are, as we heard with the children, healing, smithcraft, and poetry. And historically, she was sometimes represented as 3 sisters of the same name. Those of us from a Catholic or an Anglican upbringing may also be familiar with Saint Brigid of Ireland. Brigid the goddess and Brigid the saint, of course, are probably one and the same. Brigid was simply too beloved a goddess for people to give up with the Christianization of Ireland, and really one can understand why. As a goddess, Brigid speaks to women generally. As a fertility figure, she speaks to mothers and to all who bear children. Brigid speaks to the worker, the smith, the craftsperson, the farmer. As a goddess of healing and generosity, she speaks to the poor and the sick. As a pastoral goddess, she speaks to the animals whose lives are intertwined with our own. And as the face of a seasonal festival, she speaks of the ever-turning wheel of time, the changing of the seasons, the earth on which we live and on which we depend for life. Brigid is, in other words, a goddess deeply connected to the vulnerable, and a goddess who speaks of hope in dark times. So rather than fading into obscurity, she went underground, you might say. Disguised as a saint under the banner of Catholicism, her flame continued to burn, both metaphorically and literally. The abbey that St. Brigid is said to have founded at Kildara in Ireland was built over an ancient shrine to her namesake goddess, beneath a large oak tree from which the site takes its name, Kildara Church of the Oak. The sisters of Kildara kept an eternal flame burning for her until the abbey's destruction in the 12th century. Now, you might not be a theist, mono, poly, or otherwise. I'm not particularly one myself, but I am a storyteller and a lover of stories and symbols. No discouragement to the theists among us, of course, But I hate to see the skeptics out there glaze over at the mention of deity, especially since I am one myself. Goddess or saint, mythical figure or fictional character, I'm not really particular, to be honest. I'm less interested in what Bridget is, specifically, and more interested in what she means. As Unitarian Universalists, we uphold not doctrines, but principles. Our fourth principle is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Now, truth simply tells us what is, but meaning, well, meaning shapes our lives, our actions, every bit as profoundly as truth, and I'd argue more so. After all, it is in meaning that we find our values. Truth is what is. Meaning is how we define and shape our relationship to what is. Truth is the sun shining brightly in the first days of February. Meaning is why we take the opportunity to go gather firewood, so to speak. The draw of paganism for many is its, well, earthiness. Paganism, whether polytheistic, pantheistic, or animistic, draws its meanings from the natural world in many ways. I don't personally feel that that necessarily divorces it from modern concerns. Far from it, actually. The ancient religions of the earth embodied the struggle to survive on it in very clear and concrete ways. And I think nowhere is this clearer than in the way pagan celebrations tend to center around very earthly events, the life cycles of crops, of animals, and the cycle, of course, of the earth itself. But many of our concerns today, both personal and social, are not so different as they might appear. Questions of wealth and poverty, of workers and wages, of health and healthcare, of inclusion and discrimination, the real and dire threat of climate change, all of these are no less questions of survival. And if our faith, our spirituality, our ideals do not speak to these practical concerns, they are ultimately meaningless. In her essay, Bridget, Survival of a Goddess, Druidry.org writer Winter Kimmers has this to say about survival. To fully grasp the significance of Imhotep, it is necessary to understand the life and death struggle represented by winter in any agrarian society. In a world lit only by fire, the snow, cold, and ice of this season literally holds you in its grip, only relaxed with the arrival of spring. Although the equinox does not arrive until later, and spring is celebrated with Ostara and Beltane, Imhotep is the harbinger and the indication that better times are coming. During the cold months, certain issues become pressing. Is there enough food for both humans and animals? Will illness decimate the tribe, especially in the case of the young, the old, and nursing mothers? And what of the animals whose lives are so crucial to our own? One of the most burning questions would be the pregnant cows and ewes, since their milk is used for drink, for cheese, and curds, which might mean the difference between life and death. With industrialization, globalization, and the death grip of global capitalism, most of us find ourselves several degrees separated from these agrarian and pastoral cycles. So what does the festival of Imhotep and the goddess Bridget have to say to us today? Philip Freeman, author of The Philosopher and the Druids, writes that Bridget was, quote, a powerful deity who defies the neat categories we might wish to impose on her. Naturally enough, she appears to have been especially worshipped by women, but also by anyone of the lower classes, who felt that a mother goddess was more approachable and perhaps more sympathetic. Her popularity and position in Celtic Gaul, in fact, bear a great resemblance to the role of the Virgin Mary throughout Christian history, unquote. And indeed, the Christianization of Bridget into Saint Bridget seeks to connect her very closely with Mary. Despite, of course, never being mentioned in the Gospels, the legend of Saint Bridget presents her as Mary's midwife, and as accompanying Mary to the temple for the ritual purification of herself and her child. It's said that Bridget walked before Mary with a candle in each hand, lighting the way, and though the winds were strong on her way up the hill, the flames did not go out. Bridget's festival of Imhotep was transformed into the Christian feast day of Candlemas, falling on February 2nd, 40 days after the birth of Jesus. That very biblical 40 days just happens to be almost a month and a half, or almost halfway from one quarter day to the next. So with Christmas placed very close to the winter solstice, it ends up kind of working out that way. Bridget's traditional association with childbirth and purification get to carry over to the saint. And in later Christian tradition, which is still practiced in many places today, Candlemas is a time when people bring their candles to the church to be blessed and used for the rest of the year. and thus Bridget's associations with fire carries forward as well. The connection between Bridget and Mary almost certainly has nothing to do with two women who actually historically existed and knew each other. If you're looking for truth in this story, we'll fresh out. But in terms of meaning, mother goddesses and religious figures have always held significance, and not just in relation to motherhood and childbirth. Bridget's connection to mothers, to women, and to workers, that's pretty interesting to me. Consider, if you will, the cooperation between the women's movement and the labor movement. We can see that embodied in the verses of Bread and Roses, written by James Oppenheim in 1911, which says, "As we come marching, marching, in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray." Bread and Roses directly and inextricably ties the struggles of women to the struggles of workers, in a way I think is worth thinking about in these times. The common ground of those struggles was the devaluation of their labor, both housewives in the kitchen and workers of all genders in the mills. Bridget seems to me a particularly apt spiritual figure for those who identify with that collective struggle. Then, too, there is the relationship between women and war. Religious mother figures, such as Mary, have long held appeal for mothers in times of war when they saw their sons sent away to fight and die. I think of our own Julia Ward Howe, who in the late 1800s advocated for the creation of what she called a Mother's Day for Peace, not to be confused with what we now know as Mother's Day, which was established by Anna Jarvis in the early 20th century and was unrelated. Julia Ward Howe, in her Mother's Day proclamation, called upon women to unite and rid the world of war, saying, "In this day of progress, in this century of light, the ambition of rulers has been allowed to barter the dear interests of domestic life for the bloody exchanges of the battlefield. Thus men have done, thus men will do. But women need no longer be made a party to the proceedings which fill the globe with grief and horror. Despite the assumptions of physical force, the mother has a sacred and commanding word to say to the sons who owe their life to her suffering. That word should now be heard and answered to as never before." And we can hear a similar sentiment found in the words of Dutch activist Dr. Aletta Jacobs, a leader in the Dutch suffrage movement and Holland's first female physician. In her words, "Yes, the women will do it. They don't feel as men do about war. Men think of the economic results, women think of the grief and pain and the damage to the race. If we can bring women to feel that internationalism is higher than nationalism, then they won't stand by governments, they'll stand by humanity." And as we all know, women gained the right to vote, war did end forever. So that "if" is kind of a critical point in Dr. Jacobs' statement. And probably a very critical point for us today in our world when it cannot be denied that for many, many white women of privilege are quite happy to choose nationalism over internationalism and humanism. Simply to be women does not guarantee that we will stand by humanity. In these complicated times, no one-dimensional set of values, I think, can carry us forward into the future that we seek. A one-dimensional feminism for sure will fail us, but already has. In the same way that a multidimensional humanist ethic speaks to me philosophically, socially, and spiritually, a many-faceted goddess figure like Bridget speaks to me that way. I find a unity in her many aspects that reflects the unity I seek as a social, philosophical, and practical ideal. That unity is this. In these dark times, when winter is heavy upon us, we must seize our brief moments of sunshine and gather our resources for the storms ahead. Some of us raise our voices in song, take up our pens for poetry or essays or letters to the editor, or contribute through our labor and our various talents and crafts. Our work, our voices, the healing we can bring to this world matters. And that's not just a myth or a story. That's real. That's now. That's us. But if you're like me and you like stories and symbols, then perhaps you too can find inspiration in Bridget, goddess, saint, or story. May we each of us kindle our own fire of commitment, of craft, of song, and of healing. May we be inspired to words and works that will help to heal our world. Thank you. And now we will have a bit of a response time.